You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hello, and welcome to today's AHDB Food and Farming Podcast. This podcast is part of the AHDB Maternal Matters campaign, which aims to promote the production of heifers that are efficient, profitable, and fit for the future. I'm Alex Brown, Senior Beef Breeding and Genetics Manager for AHDB, and today I'm joined by Wiltshire Suckler farmer Sam Audrey and his vet James Ryder to chat about all the things around breeding your heifers. So welcome to both of you. How are you today? All right?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good, thanks.
Good. I'd like to kick off by finding out a bit more about yourself, Sam, and your farm. What you're juggling at the moment and the background to your beef herd would be brilliant.
Yes, we are part of a larger farming business. We calve 280 sucklers, finishing between 300 and 400 cattle a year. So some homebred and some bought in. We're also part of there's a contracting side of the business. There's some lorries and some arable and contract farming as well. So loads going on here.
Brilliant. And so what, in terms of your cattle enterprise, you said you're calving 280 per year. You're breeding and finishing. What do you do with your finishing animals?
Our finishing animals either go to ABP or to Dovecote Park, depending on the breed.
Okay. So in terms of your breeding, what do you do? What's your plan for your breeding? What type of herd do you run?
So we are doing our best to be totally self-replacing. We use Angus, Simmental and Charolais, so all of them polled as well, in a sort of three breed rotation. We are quite high on health, so we test for yonies every year, test all the cows for yonies. Had a bad year this year and had about 5% test positive for yonies. That comes from the historical part of the herd where we used to buy in dairy bred replacements, and they obviously bought in yonies as well as BD, IBR, scours, you name it, it came in with them. Yeah, and then we use majority Angus and Angus on our heifers as well, which we calve at 2 years, keeping females from each breed as well. And then they go on the, if I had a diagram, it'd be easy. they're all female small breeds are used, and then they go on a corresponding bull depending on what their breed is.
Okay, so you used to have a mixture of homebred replacements out of your three breed rotation and your dairy replacements. How has that changed over time? Is it purely down to disease that has changed that?
Yeah, so disease status it was, also as well as cow longevity. We're finding that sort of the dairy bred Simmentals and Herefords, their udders used to, you know, fall apart, get mastitis. They had too much milk that the calf could take, so they ended up getting mastitis too young, and so they were only be culled out early because of mastitis or bad bags. And there was no consistency in the replacements. Some were good and some weren't good. So I made the decision to stop buying in and go home bred, which has been a challenge as dealing with BVD, historically older herd as well. And because when you're buying in replacements, you might not buy in calf heifers, you buy in third or fourth calvers. So, you know, your herd, they aren't in your herd that long before they're getting too old. And yonies has been a big problem for us because we calve all together. So there's no, you know, if a cow's got yonies, she's spreading it to the others in the pen, and you don't know until you test the following year, possibly. So it's, you know, with the yonies, I don't think in our system you're ever going to get rid of it. It's one of those things you're testing, and this testings are positive because you're stopping those cows wasting away on farm or dying on farm. You're getting them away after their positive test.
So let's talk in a little bit more detail about your heifers. So you've got mainly your homebred heifers now, apart from when you need to bring some in to keep up the numbers. How do you go about making breeding decisions for them? How do you manage them, and what do you do with them?
Well, first criteria for a heifer is weight wise. She needs to be above 400, 410 kilos But I don't want anything above 500 kilos at that bulling when they go to the bull at about 15 months, because those are the cows that end up 800-900 kilos and they're just massive. And I've done some calf weaning efficiency work, and those big cows, on average, obviously you get some outliers, on average don't wean in a high enough percentage of their body weight as the smaller cows. So yeah, it's weight wise and then health status. So anything with yonis in the family doesn't go to the bull. You've got temperament, anything that's, you know, jumping around in the crush and you struggle to vaccinate or deal with, we don't want them either. And we pelvic measure the heifers as well. This year we haven't, because we've been short of numbers, so that's one criteria that we've left this year. But usually a pelvic measure, and there's not masses we cull out for pelvic score. It's, you know, two or three a year if those are the ones that you have to get the vet out to help calve or have a cesarean, then it's worth it.
Okay, so you mentioned pelvic scoring. That might be a nice opportunity to introduce James to our audience. Welcome, James. Would you like to give us a little bit of background around yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. So I'm a farm animal vet at Garston Vets in Frome, and we do probably majority dairy and beef with a bit of sheep work. So pelvic scoring is something that we've been trying to push as a practice in recent years. It's really important in the production of sort of efficient heifers that can calve down easily and stay within the calving block. We don't want to lose heifers to dystochia, so difficult calvings. So it's one of those things that we are trying to push and get our beef farmers to take up. Primarily, as Sam sort of already mentioned, you're trying to filter out outliers. And you need to do it before you put them to the bull, so you can make those breeding decisions ahead of them being bred. So typically we do that sort of 14 months or so of age.
Is that how you carve it too, Sam, don't you?
Yeah. We usually pelvic measure, timing it in with our first vaccination for the heifers. So timing it all in, and then they can just be chucked out and not vaccinated. And we don't want those small pelvises.
That's another good thing to do, is to try and tie in pelvic measuring with other on-farm tasks to try and make the whole process a bit more value for the farmer. So we often try and weigh animals at the same time, so you can be looking at bulling weights and making sure these animals have grown well and are achieving bulling weight as well as having adequate pelvis size. So yeah, it's important to do it before they go to bull, and it's also important to be aware of the age at which you do pelvic score them, because every month that an animal grows will increase their pelvic area. And that growth rate is linear. So with each month, a native breed, the pelvic area will increase by 8 square centimeters a month between the ages of 9 and 24 months. Whereas a continental bred animal, their pelvic area will increase by about 10 square centimeters a month. So if you're measuring an animal at 12 or 13 months old and she's coming out slightly on the smaller side, you need to bear in mind she's still got 2 months of growth before you'd be making that breeding decision, so you can factor those increases in size in to your decision making as to whether or not to keep her for your future breeding herd or not. That's something that is quite important to do. And alongside this, if you're doing the pelvic measuring, other things to do, sort of gold standard to make sure your heifers are tip top and ready for breeding, is ultrasound scan them for to check their cycling normally. And this is quite important to make sure they've actually reached puberty. That they are cycling, and that if you've got any synchronization protocols you hope to do with them, you can maximize the chances of them working, because you know you've got a cycling heifer. And like I said, it makes the most of the vet time whilst on farm. Pelvic score, scan them for cyclicity, and weigh them to check their bulling weights have been achieved.
Okay, brilliant. So if we do all of that, we should have some nice bulling heifers that we've got the right weight. We know that they're cycling, and we know that they're about ready to go. So, Sam, I guess the other half of the story is the bull. So what do you look for when you're looking for a bull specifically for your heifers?
With our heifers, we just use an Angus on them, an easy calving Angus. So sort of the direct calving ease, EBV needs to be positive. And it's from a known herd, so I use a couple of herds to buy my Angus bulls from, and they've both performed admirably over the years. I had one last year. He was slightly harder calving out of our 50 heifers we calved this year. We eight of them, and none of them were, and we think all of them were from the one bull. They had different shaped heads, so you could see in the calves, we think, who the father was. And not all of those were from the bull either. Some of them were from heifers just being heifers and getting distracted at carvings. We carve where the heifers are, 180 in one big group. So it's easy to get distracted in a busy yard and busy housing situation there. So yeah, positive calving ease. I'm also looking at good IMF scores as well, intramuscular fat, because I think, hopefully, and we will, the grading system in this country will change away from the Europe score to more taking eating quality into account. So if you can get those genetics in your herd now, then you're one step ahead if and when the...
we see some changes.
I think that's another thing to say about the genetic changes that Sam's breeding for. That's where heritability is important. So the pelvic area is about 61% heritable on the maternal line. So all of these changes that Sam's making with his breeding decisions, they are going to gradually over time, when you do these things on an annual basis, improve the quality of his herd, including the pelvic size and also the other things he's selecting for. So IMF quality, EMA, so eye muscle area, and then things like weaning weights, they're all heritable as well. And it's important to remember that all genetic progress is cumulative and permanent. So the more you do, the greater the improvements you see, and you don't ever lose them. Once you've got those positive genetic changes in your herd, you're going to be able to make progress quicker and easier.
Absolutely. You can't maintain improvements from a higher plane of nutrition if you don't continue to feed that higher plane of nutrition. But if you get that improvement in genetics, you will keep it and improve on it in your herd in every generation. So we've probably tapped on a little bit. If we're talking about the importance of calving ease for Sam, and we've touched on pelvic scoring already, might be worth chatting a little bit around calving ease in general, because there's obviously two different ways that calving ease can be affected. James, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so calving ease primarily still down to the size of the calf, and that's obviously going to be massively impacted by the choice of bull, and this is where EBVs can be really valuable. So there are two EBVs that influence calving ease, direct and daughters. So direct is how easy that animal is going to calve on that bull, and then daughters are how easy daughters of that dam will calve when they come to their calving time. So it's really instructive there to use EBVs that are going to have a positive impact on calving ease. You can also look at other EBVs such as gestation length. You might want a shorter gestation length on your heifers to minimise the effect of a bigger calf potentially, or size of calf birth weight. All of these things can be selected for to try and make sure you don't have calving problems. That's the most important thing. As we've also said, pelvic scoring is the second most important thing in calving ease. That's why we try and push that as well. And it's also really worth mentioning body condition score. And nutrition. So body condition scoring is really key to beef farmers to try and maintain the correct weight of animal throughout the year for two reasons. One, you avoid these issues of calving, and secondly, you're not overfeeding your animals, which is obviously going to cost the farmer more. And you know, no one likes to spend money on things they don't need.
Yeah, fair enough. And is that something that you do on a regular basis, Sam? Are you looking at things like body condition score?
Yeah, with the heifers, it's just keeping an eye on them, making sure they're not getting too far, which we tend not to. The heifer, the in-calf heifers will stay out as late as possible, so keeping fit and keeping lean. And then they go in with the herd, with the older cows, and they generally, you know, it's a bit tough on them, but it keeps them a bit leaner because they are down the pecking order. So they won't get a chance to scoff themselves. Going back to James's point about calving ease for daughters, I have found, we had a bull in the past, he was really easy calving, his calves came out no problem at all, but then his daughters were hard calving. So I did find in the past, I keep a record of everything that is assisted at calving, and one year I had a mother and both her daughters were assisted in the same year, and it was all because of the size of their pelvis. So that was a year or two before we started pelvic measuring. It was one of those sort of light bulb moments of, well, really, she shouldn't be in the herd. And that year, I did cull that whole family out.
Yeah.
It also has other knock-on effects on the health of that animal. If she has a hard calving, she's going to have a delayed return to normal cyclicity. So that means she's not going to come bulling as quickly as an animal that had a normal calving. She might have a higher chance of disease, like retained fetal membranes or metritis or mastitis. All of these things increase in risk if you've had a dystochia, a hard calving. So there are other massive health benefits to be gained by the farmer in making these genetic decisions based on EBVs. So they really are key.
So I think we've heard a pretty clear story towards choosing bulls that have got good figures, and that you need to choose the right type of bull for your own farm system. You want to think about whether you want to choose a bull that's got more maternal attributes for breeding your replacements, or if you're breeding for the slaughter generation, you can focus on those more terminal traits. So alongside these figures, I think a lot of people think sometimes when people are promoting EBVs that we think that the numbers are the be-all and end-all, and we don't actually care about what the animal looks like. But it's really important that these bulls are going to be fit to function, to do the job you've brought them to do. So Sam, do you do anything in particular to check whether your preferred bulls are going to perform as expected once you put them in?
Yes, we sort of at the turn of the year, so sort of 4 months before the bulls go to work, we get the vets out, we do a semen test on them, and they do a full health check on the bulls. We have had bulls come back infertile before, which would have cost us a lot of money if that bull had gone out to work that year. We also do their feet. They're working quite hard, so you do need to do their toenails just to make sure they're okay. And then during the bulling period, I keep a record of any cow I see bulling, and if they're bulling again three weeks later, we could have a problem, or if it just might be a one-off. I have caught that before by just keeping those management records out in the field of which cows are bulling and when they're bulling. And I had a bull go infertile when he was working, and you know, that messed up that calving pattern for that small group that year. But it could have been a lot worse if I hadn't spotted that and substituting for a fertile bull.
Mm-hmm. And when you're searching for your bulls, is there a particular type of animal that you're interested in? Are there certain features that would put you off?
One that's been shown, which is going to annoy a lot of people, but they're fed really well, and I have had bulls in the past that have been shown, and their feet are soft, and they, you know, they keep going lame, and which has resulted in them being culled out. You know, that's not what you want as a suckler farmer, having to constantly trim your bull's feet once a year is okay, just for maintenance, but you don't want to have to be doing it all the time. And there is, you know, I haven't experienced it, but highly fed bulls can go infertile. I don't know if James has got anything experience with that.
Well, this is, again, it's all about nutrition, body condition score. So it can affect things, and it can certainly affect their libido and their willingness to actually get on and work. And like you sort of alluded to, show bulls tend to be quite well fed and in better body condition score than I would certainly recommend for a working animal. So yeah, no, it can be important.
And would you, if you have those that are in slightly too good condition, how quickly do you need to drop them down to a working weight? What would be the effect of doing that?
Well, you don't want to be doing any sort of nutritional changes in cattle that quickly, because it can affect rumen health as well as other things. So in a bull that's in excessive body condition, he'll have more insulation in his scrotum, which will make the ambient temperature of his testicles a bit warmer, and that can affect sperm function and production, and that can be disrupted for sort of 60 days after, you know, any kind of insult or changes, and that can also be being too fat. So this is where you do have to get these things done well before the breeding season starts, which is why Sam does his bull testing 4 months before they're needed, so that if there's any issues, he's got time to replace them, sort them, trim their feet, change the body condition score without then affecting subsequent fertility, hopefully. We do try and advise farmers to do it well ahead of the breeding season for these reasons, so you've got time to think and plan and react to what's happened.
That makes a lot of sense. So James, could you take us through in a little bit more detail the process of these pre-breeding exams that are done by the vet?
Yeah, so they consist of three parts, really. So first one is like the general physical examination of the bull. So is he lame, as in all 4 feet functioning? eyes, mouth, nose, making sure his teeth are even and working, he's ruminating properly, check the heart and lungs, and just give them a general clinical examination to make sure there's nothing found. Then it becomes a little bit more specific to the reason we're there. So we'll do like a gentle exam. So we'll measure the circumference of the scrotum to make sure it's within breed society recommendations. So scrotal circumference is a good indicator of fertility, and too small a circumference is a reason to fail a bull, actually. And each breed will provide their own guidelines on size and what they deem as a minimum requirement. And then also scrotal shape can have an impact on fertility, so we'll assess that at the same time. We then do a rectal examination prior to the actual semen collection, where you can assess the other organs involved in semen production, just to make sure there's no abscesses, there's no pain or discomfort in there, anything that might indicate this bull has an issue that we need to perhaps look a bit deeper into and might affect his ability to work and perform for the farmer. And the third section is where we actually stimulate them to ejaculate and give us a semen sample. So that's generally most veterinary practices will use an electro-ejaculator, and then you get a semen sample, which we then look down the microscope at and assess. So it's probably worth saying at this point that the welfare of the bull through this process is really important to the farmer and the vet. Nobody wants to affect that negatively, and we've always got that in mind with an electro-ejaculation. I think that's got a bit of concern from farmers in the past. But if you do it correctly and you do it gently and you stimulate the bull slowly, which is why these training courses are out there for vets. So BCVA do them, and other courses provide similar level trainings like the DBR or whatever, that will then equip the vet to perform these to the highest possible standard. The third section, as I just mentioned briefly, is the actual semen analysis itself. So we'll be looking at three aspects: general gross motility of the semen sample. So when you look down the microscope, we've probably all seen a pint of Guinness settling out, that kind of swirling motion. That's what you're looking for, is that swirling motion. That indicates a good density of semen, and lots of them swimming around in the correct way. That's a good indicator, first thing. The second one is progressive motility. So you're actually looking under greater magnification, and you're trying to track individual sperm swimming forwards. Obviously, that's the way we want them to go, so they can go up the reproductive tract, find the egg and fertilize. So you'll do a count of the sperm there and take an average, and there's minimum requirements that they have to hit to pass. And the third one is where we look at individual sperm anatomy. So what does that sperm look like? Is there any abnormalities present? They're made up of a head and a tail, with various other sections in them, and it's our job to have a look down and try and identify any anomalies on that sperm that might cause it to not be able to fertilise an egg.
And so we've got our pre-breeding exams, they've passed the test, you're happy to have them on farm. You obviously do this, Sam, in quite a lot of time before you actually need to start working the bull. Do you do any kind of quarantining for them?
Yeah, so when new bulls come in, I only get them from high health status herds, and ones from similar systems to ours, mostly forage-based. So they, you know, their diet, they will be on the same diet when they come here as where they've come from. And I generally keep them separate when they come in their own pen, definitely away from the other bulls. We keep all our bulls together during the winter, so they won't see the other bulls till they finish working and they've got a big area of lots of trees in, they can get out of each other's way. So yeah, so they'll come in, be isolated. Most of them will be fertility screened before they come as well from the home farm. So yeah, they're just mostly kept separate, and sometimes depending on space we do have to put some in with some steers, some young steers, but that's all managing space on farm.
And so James, what would the best practice be in terms of things like quarantine?
So we'd always recommend at least 4 weeks really of quarantine when you are buying in or hiring in is a bit more risky. Buying in, you generally, people buy them from sort of a known herd or a high herd health farmer, so they know what they're buying, and they know that the animals come from a disease-free or disease-tested stock, basically. So we would then recommend, once they're in quarantine, that they're blood tested. It's always useful to know their vaccination status as well from the farm they've been bought from, so you can then assess what any results might mean. Because if an animal's been vaccinated, they've had their immunity stimulated. So we need to know that before we then interpret the blood results. But we test for things like BVD, IBR, leptospirosis, yonis, and Neosporin is becoming more and more of a thing that we're looking for as farm vets all around. So those are the things that I would do. And then often parasites can be treated for or tested for, certainly, and then treated for if there's any issues. And that's also when you can have a look at the bull, check he's fit for your system, check his feet. You might want to do a trim there, but hopefully he's turned up ready to roll.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you think farmers would need to maybe keep an eye out for on top of those pre-breeding checks?
For me, if we're talking about heifers, I think one thing that's worth doing, and I know Sam does do this from discussions we've had in the past, is to get your heifers to the bull a week or two earlier than the main cow herd so that they have more chance to get in calf and therefore a little bit more chance at the end of calving to recover and stay within that block. Because these heifers, you put a lot of time and effort into scoring them, pelvic scoring them, weighing them, selecting the right bulls to get you your replacements that you want. You don't want them to then fall out of line with your block. So for me, giving them a little bit more time can be really key to having a productive life with them.
Okay. And Sam, I guess you've found a lot of value from that process and changing that.
Yes. Yeah. I record calving into one of the cows and can break it down to the year the cow was born. And I found that those first calvers do take, you know, a week, 10 days longer to cycle again. So I do give them an extra week before, as it happens, the bull's going out end of this week with the heifers. And then they only have 6 weeks compared to the cows, 9. So you're only getting those really fertile heifers in calf. So as long as you've got plenty to choose from, then, you know, we only had 15% empty out of the heifers in 6 weeks last year. So that gave us enough heifers coming back into the herd this year. That sort of, you know, that'll give you, pay you dividends in the future, because those ones are the most fertile heifers, and then you keep heifers from them and then they're really fertile. It's like a rolling snowball. It just keeps on
a positive feedback loop. It keeps better. Brilliant. Okay, so we've heard a lot about pre-breeding checks. We've heard about how we want to choose our bulls, how we want to choose our heifers. If we just look at it overall, Sam, do you have a particular overall strategy that you look at in terms of herd improvement when we take into account all of your stock?
Yes, I sort of cull quite hard. I don't, you know, look at the top ones. Okay, I keep an eye on them, but I'm not concentrating on the top. I concentrate on taking out the bottom, because those are the ones that are losing you money every year. The ones that, you know, the ones that don't get in calf, well, they need to go. They've got to pay for themselves somehow. The same with ones with bad udders. They need to go. Temperament, you know, it's, what's the farm without the farmer? So what's the point of keeping a dangerous cow? So they go as well. As I said before, yonis is quite a big thing for us. It's quite a serious problem in the herd. BVD, we've cleared that out through rigorous testing. We tissue tag test all the calves at birth, and we have found PIs in the herd through that system. And I do keep an eye on the calf quality. So we weigh everything at housing at 18 months. And depending on work time availability, we do try and weigh at weaning as well, which gives you an idea of the poor performing cows. And I have found that the older the cows get, it does lead to poorer calves, as I suppose their milk quality decreases over time and their ability to look after their calves. So yeah, culling on not in calf is quite a big thing. I think that's probably helped towards our numbers that we get in calf in 9 weeks now. It's been a long slog bringing the calving period back to 9 weeks. It was sort of 15, 16, 17 weeks depending on when the bulls get taken out, so it's been like 5 years bringing it all the way back, a couple of years at a time. But it's culling those cows that don't get in calf is quite a major thing, and it's a no-brainer really. Like I said before, they've got to pay for themselves, and if they're not rearing a calf, and you know, even rearing a calf, the margins aren't very good, so they do need to go.
Absolutely. In my view. So thank you so much to both of you for your time today. I hope that those listening to us now have enjoyed the conversation, and are maybe even taking away a couple of tips to help their own enterprises. This podcast has been produced as part of Maternal Matters. For more information on the wider campaign, please visit ahdb.org.uk/maternal-matters. And you can also follow the conversation on social media using the hashtag Maternal Matters. So with a final thank you to Sam and James and to you all for listening, that's all from us. Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have any ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk. We want to hear from you.